This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is this the dagger?
The neutral zone.
Oh, oh my God.
This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
What's going on? It's time for another edition of The Neutral Zone. I am indeed your host, Brock Richardson. And first and foremost, I gotta take care of some housekeeping. We are sounding very good, not because of one Matt Agnew, as he always makes us sound very good, but we have Sam Robinson, who is filling in for Matt Agnew over the next month. The only question I will have is, by the time we get to the end of the show, shall I remember that it is Sam Robinson and not mix up his name by Matt Robinson, Sam Agnew, something to that effect? So stay tuned for about 3:57 when I get to that end of the show, and we'll see if I can get one Sam Robinson's name correct for the first week of four in a row. So welcome aboard, Sam, to our crew, and thank you very much for putting us on the air and making us sound good. Also making me sound good are my two cohorts that are with me. And the first one is Claire Buchanan. Claire, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm heading out of the city this weekend to see my brother up north.
Oh, yes. You may run into a bunch of snow up there.
Yeah, I'm definitely prepared for it. I got snow pants today.
Yeah. I mean, not that we've had any less snow down here this week, but up north seems to get just a tad more than we do. So good luck with that trip. How far is the trip in a car ride? Is it a trek?
It's just over 2 hours, around 2.5.
Oh, not too bad. Turn up the tunes, you know. I would say roll down the window, but it's a bit cold for that. So yeah, turn up the tunes and off you go. And also joining us is Josh Watson. Josh, it feels like a little while since we've last been on. How are you?
I am good. I ran into some technical issues last week. I have a brand new laptop that I got for Christmas, and it wasn't quite ready to do the job last week. So good to be back this week. Finally, back on the Neutral Zone. Looking forward to it. We got a fun little headline that you've stuck me with. So we'll see if I can keep my cool.
Yes. I'm always excited for the headlines, but this week especially, I'm like really excited because I know that Josh Watson is going to have his say about a coming up headline very soon. Let's get into it right now. Let's check in on this week's headlines.
The National Hockey League will reportedly stop testing asymptomatic players following the NHL All-Star break. The All-Star weekend will begin Friday, February 4th, and it will go until the 6th, located in Las Vegas. I, for one, was one of these people that anticipated the All-Star break not going on at all, along with COVID and the amount of games that they had to make up recently. I, for one, thought that it would be a better idea to have a break for all players involved. But at the end of the day, it is about bringing money in, and the All-Star weekend is a go.
The Buffalo Bills made NFL history against the New England Patriots. They became the first team in NFL history to not punt the football or kick a field goal in any regular season or playoff game. The Bills also scored their first 7 possessions, which has never been done, as they rout the New England Patriots 47-17 in their wild card matchup. Next up is Kansas City, and we'll see how this goes. Now, for the most anticipated headline, here's Josh.
No, I think Claire has one first.
Oh, did
absolutely.
I skip?
Absolutely. The Montreal Canadiens have named player agent Kent Hughes as the team's 18th general manager. The Canadiens said in a release this week that the club has agreed to a 5-year deal with the 51-year-old Montreal native.
Novak Djokovic has been deported from Australia and is not a part of the Australian Open tennis tournament. This comes after the immigration minister executed his powers and denied Djokovic's visa for a second time. The decision comes due to concerns over public safety and well-being. The only thing that is not clear at this time is whether Djokovic will in fact receive the 3-year ban from Australia that is normally accompanied with the deportation. This man has been at the center of the tennis news for the entire pandemic, and it is not because of his tennis. Djokovic has chosen not to be vaccinated, and surprisingly enough, I don't have a problem with that. Where I have a problem is that you then expect that you should be able to gallivant around the world, play tennis amongst the world's best tennis players, and not face any consequences. Sorry, buddy, it doesn't work like that.
Rachel Hallman and John Morris have been selected to represent Canada at the 2022 Winter Olympic Games in curling mixed doubles. Thus, Emma Miskiw will now skip Rachel Hallman's Ontario rink at the 2022 Scotties Tournament of Hearts. The event begins on Friday, January 28th, and it is located in Thunder Bay, Ontario.
Those are your headlines, and I got so excited for Josh's headline, and he did such a wonderful job that I skipped over Claire. So Claire, well done, and my apologies on that. Those are your headlines. Let's check in on our Twitter poll, which last week's question relates to the Novak Djokovic soap opera, let's call it. And that is, if you were in charge, would you allow Novak Djokovic to play in the Australian Open? 78% of you said not a chance. 22% of you said yes. And then we have this week's Twitter poll question. Which game in the NFL are you most looking forward to? KC, Buffalo, Cincinnati, Tennessee, Green Bay, San Francisco, and LA, Tampa Bay. Cast your votes at our Twitter handle, which will be given out in just a bit on the program. Coming up next, we're going to feature cross-country skiing in the para sports world. Stay tuned for that right after the break here on the Neutral Zone. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, alongside Claire Buchanan and Josh Watson. One of the features that we've gotten accustomed to doing because of the Paralympic Games is featuring sports that you will see at the Games. And in this case, they will be in Beijing for the Paralympics. It's a little over a month and a half, I would say, and the Olympics is around about a month, so time is ticking away. And this week we're going to do cross-country skiing. Now, we're going to chat first and foremost to say that cross-country skiing first appeared at the 1976 Winter Paralympic Games in Sweden. The competition is open to athletes with physical impairment and blindness and low vision impairment. So that's a little bit about where the sport first came and who it's open to.
We're going to cover how to play the sport. Men and women used the classical technique in all cross-country distances until skating was introduced by athletes at the Innsbruck 1984 Paralympic Winter Games. Since then, events have been split into two separate races, classical and free technique. The new technique, however, was not officially used in a medal race until 1992 in Albertville, France. Depending on functional impairment, a competitor may use a sit ski, a chair, which is a chair equipped with a pair of skis attached to it. Athletes with vision impairment compete in the event with a sighted guide. male and female athletes compete in sprint, short distance, middle distance, and long distance. All these races are ranging from 1 kilometer to 30 kilometers in distance. Or they participate in a team relay using classical or free techniques. Cross-country skiing is governed by the IPC with coordination by the World Para-Nordic Skiing Technical Committee, following modified rules of the International Ski Federation, and is practiced by athletes in 24 countries.
Now, in terms of the equipment for cross-country skiing, as Claire mentioned earlier, some athletes with a physical impairment do use a sit ski. It is a chair that is supported with a suspension over a pair of skis that ride in a track. The chair also has strapping to secure the skier to the ski. In terms of standing skiers use conventional cross-country racing skis like you would see at any Olympics or Paralympics. They are fiberglass composite construction, and the athletes both use poles when able to provide propulsion. Fiberglass classical skis are usually 25 centimeters to 30 centimeters taller than the height of a skier. They are light, weighing less than 0.45 kilograms each, and they are narrow, with curved tips and a cambered midsection, which is thicker and arched. Free technique skis are about 10 to 15 centimeters shorter for greater maneuvering. They are also nominally stiffer and have tips that curve less than classical technique skis. The underside of both types of skis have a groove down the center to keep the ski straight when going downhill.
And then if we look at classification, it's very similar to the biathlon. Athletes compete in several different classes depending on their activity limitation of their specific impairments. So let's talk about the standing classes, LW2 to LW9, LW2 to LW4 are skiers with leg impairments, LW5 to LW8 are skiers with arm impairments, and LW9 are for skiers with a combination of arm and leg impairments. Then if we talk about the sit ski, they are LW10 to LW12. All sit ski impairments are affecting their legs specifically, which makes sense because that would be why they would have to sit. And then if we talk about the classification that are individuals who are blind and partially sighted, we're talking about classifications from B1 to B3. So that's a overall look at the sport. Now, for you guys, I'm curious to know, is this a sport that you would try? Claire, start with you.
I've tried it on dry land, kind of like the cross training version of it. And I am curious to get on the actual snow and try it. It is a lot of work. It looks really hard. I definitely would be more inclined to try downhill skiing. But again, they are both pretty intense sports in their own right.
Well, Claire, you're braver than I am, because if I have a choice between downhill and cross country, I'm going to stick to the one that's flat. Thank you very much. I have no desire to hurtle down a hill. I would definitely try cross-country skiing. As a person using a wheelchair, I would be curious to see if my upper body strength would actually benefit me in a cross-country ski situation. Plus, it's just a neat idea to be able to get out and to enjoy nature and be virtually silent doing it. I think that's kind of cool.
You can kind of sort of, as I would imagine, you can kind of sort of compete, but you can also be in like a zen mode as well, because as you point out, you're within nature. And I've seen some of the places where they do cross-country skiing, and it's very nature-like and it's very peaceful looking. And I, for one, would take the opportunity, if I could do it, where I'd be looking around and sort of taking in, although competing at my best level, of course, I would just want to do it. It's something that I think is cool. Now, for me, and I have to say this, for me, every time I've tried a sport that involves ice, this is what happens. I have no upper body strength, so I have sat in a sled or a sit ski, and I go from one side, somebody picks me up. I go over to the other side, somebody picks me up. And then I end up on my back with my feet in the air. So this these sports with ice is just not, it's not a good look for me. But it looks very, very fun to do from the outside. And I mentioned last week when we were chatting about a similar sport, is that shooting at targets, as somebody who has a visual impairment, no one should give me any kind of operation to be able to shoot at a target. So,
but you have the audible tone. You'd be fine. Just point you in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I'd be able to find a support personnel to be able to willingly give me this and point me in a direction and say, "Okay, fire now." I don't think this is happening. So it's. You know, it's a cool sport, and again, it would take a lot of stamina. I would feel that's a lot of kilometers you can go for one thing. And I mean, for me, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, 1 kilometer, that's long enough. But when you can get up to, you know, 30 kilometers, that's a long way for someone to go. Would you be more inclined to do the shorter distance or the longer distance, Josh?
I am definitely a short distance person, I would say. My cardio is probably no better than maybe 5 kilometers at most, and that's only because I know I've done 5K in my wheelchair. But you were talking about Zen earlier. I think if I did a long distance, I think by about mile 6 or kilometer 6, I would definitely have to be in that Zen state, or the only thing I'd be hearing is, are you crazy? What are you doing? Why are you doing this? This hurts. Why are we doing this? my inner voice is very active at times.
Yeah, I honestly have the cardio of a hockey player, and so my body's only used to short periods of full out exertion. So to be able to go anything over 5K, like Josh said, like I've done 5K on both my ski erg and in my chair, but to go 5+ kilometers on snow, probably in the wind, just I hate being cold to begin with. So yeah. I can't imagine. Like, the only thing that I like about winter is that it's hockey season and I'm inside most of the time. So I honestly don't know how they do it, but I would definitely give it a go. But there's no way you could see me doing 20, 30 kilometers. Oof. That sounds bonkers.
It really does. Claire, I've got to ask you this question because you said you're used to, you know, shorter shifts. What is the time like where you're on the ice and you're like, okay, this is getting too long. My arms, my lungs are screaming at me. Have you ever timed like what your longest shift would be, where you're just like, okay, I can do that, but any longer would be a bit much?
That's funny you asked that, because with the women's national team, we have a rule of your max shift is no longer than a minute. It's one length down, one length back, and maybe another length back the other way if you're having trouble getting out of the play. But we plan for 45 seconds to a minute, and then you better be switching with your line, because like any NHL game, you need fresh legs and fresh arms back on the ice as soon as possible. So I probably have had a shift here and there in rec hockey that's lasted a couple minutes, but I've never timed myself. No.
I was going to say, I'm sure there were a couple of shifts when you and I played together that were quite substantial, but that was a different level.
Yeah, that was also a long time ago. I was much younger.
Yeah, it's, you know, I look at NHL guys and, you know, when they've been on the ice for so long, and then you start seeing, you know, like McDavid's been on the ice for like, you know, 2 minutes or whatever, and then they get to the bench and they're just like heeled over and they're like, okay, I need to skip a shift, or I need, you know, whatever. And people say, oh, 2 minutes is not that long. But in a high-level situation, even 45 seconds is a long time. And if you get yourself caught, you know, in the defensive zone or even in the offensive zone, it can really catch up on you quick. So for these athletes to be able to do 30 kilometers, like, I bow to you, because I don't know a lot of my friends who would say, yeah, I'll sign up to do 30 kilometers, no problem. You know, it's,
and I, and, they might and sign I have, up for the sport, but then you hear, I'm sorry, we're going how far?
Yeah, it's just, and I mean, we all have, you know, a lot of athletic connections with, and I'm 30 kilometers, that's a long, long way. So that's a little bit about the sport, and next week we will continue the series as well with the next winter para sport that you can see. Coming up next, we're going to feature the divisional round for the NFL, and we'll see where we get to. There's some statistics out there, that some rankings that I've seen that I'm going to go, huh? So we're going to talk all about those. Coming up next, right after this break here on the Neutral Zone, stay with us. You know, sometimes in commercial breaks, they're very informative when you get talking around the proverbial table, because I asked technical producer Sam Robinson if he has done any running or would do it, and his first response was, of what kind? And so we got onto the discussion, and he mentioned that in some cases, the longer you run, you may get bored, which is not something I thought of. But as I was thinking about it, as we were coming out of this break, I'm thinking, yeah, if I'm doing anything and, you know, just going somewhere, and I get that there's like a finish line and I get all that. But like, for me, I agree with, you know, Sam, it's like at some point you'd get bored. And I never thought of that at all when we were doing the segment at all, which was a very good point.
Maybe I should give a caveat here to it, guys. I like to run on a treadmill because I live in downtown Toronto, and I don't believe in running out on the streets and running into traffic and having to think about it. So I like to run on the treadmill. I think that gets pretty boring. But trail running, or, you know, even a marathon, I've never done a foot race before, but that would be, I could see that being a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, of course, because you're looking at the wilderness. But like, as you point out, you're running on a treadmill, and like, you're not going anywhere. I mean, you're doing good for your body, but you're not going anywhere and watching yourself do it. And I get it; they've done those Pelotons that you can have, you know, the TV running with the scenery, but it's just not the same.
Not
and
into I mean, that.
I've never run at all in my life with my disability, but it's one of those things. So thank you, technical producer Sam Robinson, for adding into the conversation there. It was fun, and we enjoy those, and I love those conversations where we can get into, would you guys do this, and we all end up 30 kilometers, not so much. All right, let's talk a little bit about the NFL. Wild card weekend was pretty wild. Let's run down the scores of Wild Card Weekend. We had Tampa Bay defeating Philadelphia 31-15. Not really a surprise on that one. San Francisco beats Dallas 23-17. That one was a bit of a disappointment if you are Dallas. I think they were thinking that they would be in a different place this week, and they had been prepared to go further, but not so fast. Jimmy Garoppolo did good things there, and it was a good game to watch. And then we had Kansas City wins over Pittsburgh. Again, no surprise. 42-21 over Pittsburgh. No surprise there. I was hoping that Pittsburgh would win, but no such luck. Then we had Buffalo taking care of business over New England, 47-17. And we chatted about that in the headline as well. And then finally, we had Cincinnati winning for the first time in a long time, 26-19 over Oakland. Thoughts on Wildcard Weekend? Was there a game that stood out to you, Claire?
I've been following Buffalo all season. I'm a Green Bay fan, so I kind of expected us to be here. But the Bills season has been kind of up and down. And for them to, again, take care of business over New England, which they have done a few times this season. But the way that they did it was insane. And again, with my Green Bay Packers, I'm excited to watch Aaron Rodgers. He's right under 2,000 pass yards and 20 touchdowns with zero interceptions. He's looking like a video game out there.
Yes, I agree. Josh?
Yeah, for me, as you said, Tampa Bay over Philadelphia, that was like easing Tom Brady into the playoffs. San Francisco, I'm not surprised that they beat Dallas, but I did think there was going to be a higher score, and I thought it was going to be closer. So that one was a bit of a surprise. Kansas City over Pittsburgh, I'm in the same boat as you were, Brock. I would love to have seen Big Ben's career extended by a couple of weeks, but it just wasn't going to happen against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, who are absolutely looking like the Chiefs of old. The surprise for me was Buffalo over New England. It wasn't that I thought Bill Belichick was going to wipe the floor with Buffalo. I thought Buffalo could win, but it was the way they did it. It was just masterful to watch. I'm a Miami Dolphins fan, as we all know, and so I've had my fair share of watching Buffalo destroy teams, but not necessarily a team that I thought was as good as New England. I thought they were better than they turned out to be. So that one was interesting. And Cincinnati over Oakland, well, that was a nice sort of cap for Cincinnati, I think. I tend to like their team. I hope they do well, but I'm not so sure how they're going to fare this week, but we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah, and before we get into the matchups, I saw something that I posted on my social media that was done by the NFL. This is NFL's power rankings, and it was tweeted out by the Buffalo Bills. It was not done by Buffalo. For those of you, when I give you the list, go, oh yeah, this is Homer Town putting the list together. But no, it was done by the NFL in some capacity. And I want to run down the list, and then I'm going to give you guys where I see a problem with this list, and then see if you guys like the original list or what I come up with. So here's how the list looks. We have Buffalo on top. We have Green Bay in second place. We have Kansas City in third place. We have the Buccaneers in fourth, the Rams in fifth, Tennessee in sixth, San Francisco in seventh, and Cincinnati in eighth. Even as a Bills fan, I'm looking at this going, okay, you're putting both Rodgers and Mahomes underneath Buffalo. Josh Allen's been great, but I'm just not sure it's that good. I know Tampa Bay is having struggles with injuries, people are out, etc. I get that. But to me, when you have number 12, and I have tried to bet against number 12 many times and failed. So here's how I would look at this list. I would say you'd put Green Bay on top. You're welcome, Claire. You'd put Tampa Bay second, Kansas City and Buffalo tied for third. And I would only say tied for third because they're obviously playing each other. And then the rest of the list, I kind of see. Do you guys agree with the original list I gave you, or would you make those same adjustments? Claire, start with you on this one.
I mean, yeah, it's a good time to be a Packers fan sitting on top. I would definitely have them on top. And then I'd have Kansas City in second and the Bills third, the Bucks fourth. And then I have Tennessee and LA kind of in a toss up. Derrick Henry is back, but he's had no time and is going to have no time to ease back into things. So, and it's a playoff game, so they're going to give him just the same load that he's had all season. So it'll be interesting to see how he performs jumping back into things. But with the LA Rams, you have Cooper Kupp and Stafford that are just blowing up in the air. And so it's a toss-up where those two teams land for me. And the rest of the list is just kind of like a mix of there's no really team that stands out in any spot after that.
Yeah, the list is definitely interesting in both iterations here. My personal thought is that Green Bay is sneaky good, which is surprising maybe to say when it's Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, but you don't hear a lot about them. They just continue to be good. So I would put them first. I think Buffalo and Kansas City to me are 2-3, or Kansas City 2, Buffalo 3. It depends. But I think they're very good, and I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. I'm going to leave Tampa Bay fourth, but that's only because of the issues that you talked about. They've had, of course, Antonio Brown being Antonio Brown. They've had Leonard Fournette out. They've had so many injuries to the wide receiver core. But you can't ever bet against Tom Brady, in my opinion. And that's a tough one for me to leave in fourth, just because I do think LA is better than people give them credit for. I thought they would be higher, but they still kind of slot into that fifth spot. And then I would reverse San Francisco and Tennessee. I just think that San Francisco with Debo Samuel and George Kittle are explosive. I mean, when you've got those two weapons as a quarterback, I think you're laughing, to be quite honest. But I do think Cincinnati will surprise people. I think they might go further than we think they will. So we'll see.
Interesting thoughts there, for sure. And I agree with both of what you guys have said. For me, Jimmy Garoppolo really, really needs to prove himself again this week. I think what you saw last week was a case where they were in charge, they were large and in charge, and then you started seeing kind of things that I kind of go, okay, so in this case, when you were leading, you threw a pass into double coverage and then therefore got intercepted. And it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, prove to me that you want to be that quarterback that you think you are. And I believe he has the potential, but I just didn't see that in parts of last week. And so the test is going to be really tough because Aaron Rodgers ain't going to give you a lot this week. You're going to have to take advantage of your possessions. And I think to close the game out last week, he just didn't take advantage of it. I could be proven wrong. I do like him as a quarterback. I just need to see more on a consistent basis and closing out games. And I didn't see that this week. I saw kind of a nervous team towards the end, which you cannot play against Green Bay at all. So let's talk about as many of these matchups this week that are coming. Let's start with Cincinnati, Tennessee. Josh, want to take your thoughts on that one?
For me, this game is going to all depend on the health of Derrick Henry. I did see as we were coming to air today that he has been activated from the IR and he is going to play. So, I mean, that's good for Tannehill because he needs a running attack in order to be successful. That's how that offense is designed. I don't know. This one's really hard for me to pick. I'm going to say Cincinnati because I think Ja'Marr Chase just has a way of taking over a game. But if Derrick Henry is Derrick Henry, then I'm probably wrong.
I, as an Alabama fan, I think you're wrong, Josh. I think the former Heisman is going to tap into that Alabama mentality. And I think he's maybe not have the numbers that he's used to, but I think he's at least going to make the impact on the game that he's supposed to. So it's going to be a tight game. And I am looking forward to seeing if Cincinnati can live up to the task and live one more game through these playoffs, because like they're making a historic playoff run, even just winning one game so far. So it's going to be an interesting game to watch for sure.
Yeah, I'm going with Tennessee there. I think that when you come back of injury of a guy of his caliber, I think just his presence alone, even at a 50% clip, if that's what it is, I think the presence is going to be there to make a difference. And I really believe that Cincinnati, they played a good game last week, but if you're going to do it, prove it this week. And I just don't think they have the horses to do that. Going down the list, we're going to switch over to San Francisco, Green Bay. Claire, I know your thoughts on this one, but give them to me anyways. Go first on this one.
I wish I had a big cheesehead hat to put on right now, like they do on college game day, because that's what I would be sporting right now. I think this is going to be like a good game to watch. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to handle his business like he usually does. Yeah, Garoppolo needs to have that mentality. And I think that's where he's lacking, is at the end of games, in stressful situations, when there is a lot of tension. And I think he needs to strengthen his mental presence there, because he's not making good decisions. And like you said, Brock, you can't make mistakes against Aaron Rodgers.
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's very true. And I really want to take San Francisco, but I think I know better. Aaron Rodgers is just not someone you take lightly. And I think given all of the drama last offseason, is he staying? Is he going? Will he play? Won't he play? Et cetera, et cetera. I think now that he's in the playoffs, I think you're going to see him say, right, okay, we're doing this, and that's that. So I would love to see San Francisco do well, but I just don't think it's going to happen.
I'm with both of you. I just think that Aaron Rodgers, put aside all the drama, this season Aaron Rodgers has the skill and is just going to chew up Garoppolo, really. I truly believe that. I could be wrong, but I really think that Green Bay is the strong team here. Let's talk about LA, Tampa Bay. LA put a really strong game last week, but then as I was chatting with one of my friends over social media, I said, yeah, they're playing really well, but you got number 12 next. And he tried to tell me, oh, we're going to chew up Tom Brady. And I am okay. But, you know, I was living in the AFC East for as long as he did and playing against my Bills. I just, okay, whatever. Your guys' thoughts on this one? Start with Josh.
Well, since I let out that maniacal laugh, I think you probably can guess that I'm going to go Tampa Bay. And it's strictly because of the Brady factor. Brady seems to be able to take whatever receivers, whatever running backs you give him, and turn them from bleep into gold. It's remarkable. I mean, he went to Tampa Bay and they had been bad for how many years, and he brought them Super Bowls. Like, there's just something about him. You think that you've got him figured out. You think that you've got him down, and he just goes, oh, okay, you're going to leave that guy open. Okay, boom, 5 yards, boom, 7 yards, boom, 8 yards. Like, he'll dink and dunk as much as he'll throw for 40 yards in one play. Like, he will take what you give him, and he will exploit you. It's going to be Tampa Bay.
I don't think so. I think that, yes, they have number 12, but at the same time, their defense needs to stop both, not only Cooper Kupp and not only Stafford, but also people tend to forget that they also have Odell Beckham Jr. They can't double team either one of those people, either one of those players, because it's going to be wide open. So I think that, yes, that the Bucs offense is going to produce because they have Tom Brady, but I don't think that their defense is good enough to stop the Rams from also loading up the scoreboard.
Interesting. Claire is going off the board on that one.
He's not. He's human, guys. He's not a machine.
Okay. Are you sure? Because we've tried this before.
We're pretty scarred about this guy. So he's burned both our teams many, many, many times. So maybe it's, I don't know, PTSD or something. I don't know.
Well, yeah. And not only that, if you go way back into the iteration of this program, I lost a bet where I had to take the entire Neutral Zone team out for lunch because I told Dave Recavina way back then, eventually Tom Brady will not have it, and he still has it years later. So I refuse to make a bet on Tom Brady and go against him. Listen, I need 2 minutes to put my thoughts together on this final matchup. So we're going to take a break here, and then we're going to preview almost one of the marquee matchups of the weekend, and that is the Bills and Kansas City Chiefs. We're also going to check in a little bit on the Canadian Press and the Olympic and Paralympic. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right. I've made up my mind on the Bills and Chiefs. But I'm not going to tell you what my decision is yet. I'm going to let my cohorts go first on this one. Kansas City, Buffalo, what say you guys, Claire?
I think this is going to be a game that comes down to the last couple plays of the game. It's been hard for me to pick a team that's going to come out on the winning side of this game. I hope it's Buffalo, but I can't see it being a blowout or very much one-sided. So it's definitely the game that I'm most excited to watch because I think it's going to be just back and forth.
Yeah, for me, I would love to take Buffalo here because they have surprised me. But at the end of it, I'm going to go with Kansas City because they've been there before. They've done it before. And I feel like they've found their swagger. So we'll see how it goes.
I am a Buffalo Bills fan. And Josh and I went 6-for-6 last week. And we were saying, you know, what's going to happen to the world? We both went 6-for-6, which has never happened in my lifetime picking games. My heart is telling me one thing as a Bills fan, and my head is telling me the other. Patrick Mahomes is unbelievable. So is Josh Allen. This is at Arrowhead Stadium, and I think that's why one of the reasons I need to give the Kansas City Chiefs that edge when I say they are going to come down to the last play or the last couple of plays. I'm not going to go deep and say it's going to be the last play because, you know, you just never know. But I just think Kansas City is just slightly better. I know Stephon Diggs was frozen in that picture last year when he watched Kansas City celebrate and was, you know, dejected. I just don't know if they've got enough in them to defeat Kansas City, and that's why my pick this week is Kansas City, and I hope I'm wrong on this one. Let's chat a little bit about some clips that have come out recently. U.S. prosecutors have charged a Texas man with giving performance-enhancing drugs to basically put bad light on last year's Olympic Games. Let's take a listen.
Prosecutors say Eric Lira of El Paso is the first person to be charged under a new federal anti-doping law governing international sports competitions. Authorities say Lira distributed the drugs, including human growth hormones and a blood clotting hormone, for the purpose of corrupting the Olympics. He's also accused of conspiring to violate drug misbranding and adulteration laws. The criminal complaint includes details that identify Okabari as one of the athletes involved. The sprinter had been provisionally suspended for testing positive for human growth hormone in July 2021, just hours before she was due to run in the semifinals at the Olympics. Julie Walker, New York.
When I listen to this clip, guys, like I listen to it and the first thing that comes to my mind is, why are we still here? Why are we still talking about people that are trying to put, you know, put bad light on the Paralympic game or the Olympic Games and Paralympic Games? Because let's not fool ourselves. It's both. But like, why are we here still hearing that drugs are being used, Josh?
I am very perplexed when it comes to this issue because we seem to, as a society, hold amateur athletes at the Olympics and Paralympics and professional athletes in general to a different standard, I think, than other athletes, I guess. We seem to have this notion that they should be pure and do no wrong. Well, humans are humans. We're going to do what we want to do. And when you consider the amount of money and prestige that go along with the Olympics and winning them, of course this sort of thing is going to happen. And it's not right. There are rules against it. But it's going to happen, and I'm not sure if those thoughts are coherent, but that it's a shame and it's sad, but I'm not surprised, I guess, is what I'm saying.
It's unfortunate, but I'm not surprised either. At the end of the day, they, like you said, Josh, these athletes, when they reach the international stage and the Olympics and Paralympics, not so much the Paralympics, because that's another issue, but these athletes know that if they win a gold medal, they're getting a pretty good payday. Like, we're talking 30 grand for a gold medal. And so if someone comes in with the wrong intention of being an athlete, then their judgment gets clouded. And unfortunately, we are humans, like we've been discussing, and people make mistakes.
Also, when you get pressured, both by yourself and by governments saying, you know, you need to come back with you know, a medal, you need to do well, you're getting $30,000. And let's be fair, $30,000 is a lot of money for an athlete who's training and who's doing all of those things. I know that for me, I was always scared of any drug that I took. I would always check the labels and, you know, type it in and make sure that this is not, you know, performance enhancing, even if it's not what it's meant for and making sure that I have my TUE forms filled out and all of those things. But it's tough and it's hard because you want to be successful in your sport and it's that simple. So I just think that people need to understand of the situation and move on from there. That is the end of our show for this week. I'd like to thank Josh Watson, Claire Buchanan. I'd also like to thank our technical producer, Sam Robinson. Our regular technical producer is Matt Agnew. Our technical supervisor is Paula Deneen. And our manager of AMI Audio is Andy Frank. Tune in next week because you just never know what happens when you enter the neutral zone. Have a great weekend and be safe. We'll talk to you next week.